You're listening to Valley Edition. I'm Joe Moore. Exactly 1 year from today will be the midterm election. And that means before politicians go back out on the campaign trail, there's one last chance to pass big legislation, including things like immigration reform. Earlier this year, there was a lot of talk from both sides of the political spectrum about the issue, but it sort of took a back seat with the attention paid to the debt ceiling, to the fiscal cliff, to the rollout of Obamacare. Now a couple of Republican congressmen from the Valley have injected themselves into the immigration debate in a new way by co-sponsoring a Democratic bill for comprehensive immigration reform, including a pathway to citizenship, border security, and a work program. One of them was Jeff Denham. The other, David Valadao, who I spoke with yesterday about immigration reform and a host of other issues important to residents of the Valley. Congressman Valadao, welcome.
Thanks. Thanks for having me on.
Last week, you joined your colleague Jeff Denham to become one of only three members of the GOP to sign on as co-sponsors of H.R. 15, the Border Security, Economic Opportunity, and Immigration Modernization Act. This bill would address comprehensive immigration reform and also address border security and some other things as well. It includes a pathway to citizenship, as it's called. Why this move and why now?
Well, we've been talking about immigration reform for the last 11 months, and I've only been in Congress for 11 months, and I've been getting a lot of commitments and a lot of promises, and I've been having a lot of conversations with both sides of the aisle. And now closing or getting close to the end of the year, I'm starting to see that it's fallen off to the side a little bit. I mean, there are some big issues facing our country, so I'm not going to deny that. But immigration is one that is important to my constituents. It is one that is important to my district as well. So it's something that I wanted to make sure leadership knew. I wanted to make sure everybody knew that let's move this. I'm serious about this conversation. This is how serious I am. Let's sign on to a bill. Let's have this conversation.
There's discussion among political observers in Washington that there could be a number of members of the GOP who would vote for this bill if it comes up to a vote, but getting it to a vote is another issue. You're working with Speaker Boehner and others in the House leadership to try to do this. What are your thoughts on moving this forward and getting it to a vote?
Well, this bill, as it's written today, is not perfect. Jeff Denham, he had a few additions he wanted to make to it. I've talked to Joe Garcia, the author, about it, and there are some things I want to adjust in it as well. What I'm asking for right now is to start to have that debate in committee on the floor. We know, and everybody sits around, points fingers, and says, look, we know this is wrong with it. We know that's wrong with it. Well, then, if we know what's wrong with it, why not have that debate and start to make those changes and improve it? We know the problem's there. We know what's wrong with the bill. We know what needs to be done. Let's have that debate.
What are some of those concerns you have?
Well, for me, some of the concerns are specifically on some of the guest worker programs and some of the definitions and how they are across the how that definition affects the bill in general. I mean, if they break it down the step-by-step approach the way the House wants to do it, those definitions don't quite affect each other quite as much as in a comprehensive bill. But it is important to make sure that if we define a certain role as something, that it doesn't affect other portions of the bill in a negative way so that it makes some of the guest worker programs unworkable. And the whole purpose of immigration reform is obviously visas for people that want to immigrate here the legal way, making sure that our guest worker programs are working the legal way so that people have those opportunities. And that's something that I think is very important and we should be focusing on.
How does this differ from the Senate bill?
Well, the Senate bill 744 is a little bit different, but it, for the most part, everything except for some of the border security measures in there, is the Senate version. They took the Senate version, stripped out some controversial border security language in there, and replaced it with the McCall Amendment, which McCall Amendment passed out of committee, bipartisan support. I think it was almost unanimous. And it's a good bill that actually helps with or ensures that we have a secure border. And it was a bipartisan piece of legislation, so I think it makes sense to put that on there.
You've received a lot of attention nationally for your stance on this issue. A lot of folks have observed that your district is around 70% Latino. Your district is also a heavily agriculture district, and ag interests have been pushing for some sort of immigration legislation for some time. What do you think this would mean for the Valley?
Well, it would mean that we would have a good, honest supply of labor, especially on the ag side. The guest worker side is important to us. I'm an ag guy myself. I grew up on a dairy. I still own a dairy today. and I spent a lot of time back in Washington talking about immigration reform. So it's not a new topic to us. It is something that's important to us. And I think even for most farmers in general, it's important to them as well. I mean, water is always top of the list for us, and that's something that we want to make sure we focus on and spend a lot of time on. But immigration is something that's there, and it's something that's always coming up. And the stronger the administration comes in and starts to enforce the laws, especially when you get into E-Verify and those, if they leave that hole there with no guest worker program, it puts agriculture and the economy of the valley in a really tough spot.
There's an internal debate going on in the GOP and has been for some time about the GOP's relationship with Latinos and Latino voters. There's some people who say without some movement on this issue, the GOP faces an uncertain future electorally. There's others that say if the Republican Party gives in on this issue, that it could mean a new voting bloc for Democrats. How do you view the Republican Party's relationship with Latinos here in the Central Valley and beyond, and how does this fit into that?
Well, I think as far as any piece of legislation that we ever work on, doesn't matter if it's immigration, healthcare, whatever, if we had always address everything by in a partisan way, it will always end up losing. We have to address this from a person's perspective, from a human perspective. And I think when we work on legislation like immigration reform, if you do it just for political reasons, you're probably going to do something wrong. You've got to do it for the right reasons. And we all know there's something wrong with immigration reform, with the immigration system. So we have to have some type of reform to it. And I think that Republicans coming to the table and having that conversation, honest debate about it, not just talking points, not just pointing out what's wrong with the system, but have an honest debate about it, I think will give us a lot more credibility on the issue and other issues, and it'll help us quite a bit. And it'll be good for the country in general.
If you just joined us on Valley Edition today, our guest is Congressman David Valadao. Turning to Washington, do you think anything has changed in the nation's capital since the shutdown and the aftermath? Has it made it more difficult to try to address something like immigration reform? Has it changed the political calculus in other ways moving forward on some other priorities? The Farm Bill is something I want to ask you about in a moment. What's changed?
Well, during this whole shutdown, the most frustrating part for Republicans in the House was that the administration never wanted to sit down, never wanted to talk to us. The Senate, we would offer bills. We would I think the fourth bill that we offered was conference committee. Let's sit down and talk. We know there are problems here, and we need to talk about them. Let's work through this. And the fact that no one wanted to sit down and talk made it really difficult for future legislation, even immigration, farm bill, anything else, because it does make it hard to trust the other side. It does make it hard to work with the administration when you come to a situation like this where it was really for politics more than policy.
Republicans failed in the effort to defund or delay the president's health care law. Most political observers would probably agree that stopping implementation of the law at this point is unlikely. Obviously, members of both parties, though, have concerns about the law moving forward, certain provisions and things that we learn more about as the law progresses and the mandate rolls forward. The rollout of the Health Insurance Exchange website has been subject of considerable concern. Where do we go from here in your view? Are there certain elements that can be looked at that maybe Democrats and Republicans could agree that, you know, we need to reopen this and look at this particular portion of the law? Is there some piecemeal approach maybe to refining the law?
Well, and that's one of the issues we face is this law was passed without many, if anybody, actually reading it. And that's a bad thing to do, any piece of legislation you ever work on. Now we're starting to see those things. And now, after this big fight, you're starting to get Democrats to the table and say, look, we know this is bad. But they were there before the shutdown. They were there before the implementation of the law. Now it's just becoming more apparent because everybody is focused on that issue. Is there an opportunity? Yeah, there's always an opportunity. We've introduced legislation after legislation and actually passed out of the House from repeals to delays in certain parts. I mean, there's even the healthcare with the tax on medical device that 78 or 79 members of the Senate have signed on to that they want to repeal it. So there is a lot of bipartisan support out there. It just depends on how much the administration wants to sit down and talk about it. I mean, when you've got the Secretary Sebelius coming in and saying the website's never failed, when it's actually failed at the exact moment she's saying that. I mean, it tells you that there's not a whole lot of sincerity, and it'll make the negotiations difficult in the future.
I just want to follow up on something you said in regards to the medical device tax. Do you think that there maybe is off the record in the private circles in Washington and things like that, is there more of a spirit of bipartisanship perhaps than we realize this in reading the headlines and the talking points? Is there maybe some optimism for progress and common ground?
In general, back in Washington, and just like my time in Sacramento, whenever there's a debate going on and the cameras are on, it's not against the press or anything bad to say about them, but they do have to sell airtime. They do have to pay their bills. Saying something interesting, different, or outside of the norm gets people interested in paying attention to their station or paying attention to those headlines, and they have to report on those. But those are usually not the norm of either side of the aisle. I have groups that I meet with. One is No Labels. One is Unified Solutions. No Labels is all sides, Democrats, Republicans, all levels, from Senate to every class of Congress. Unified Solution is strictly members of Congress, first class, the 113th class, Republicans, Democrats. A few of us get together, and we talk about different issues. And it's always interesting to sit down and ask, what have you heard in your district? What are they telling you on this issue or that issue? Is there room for us to work together? And there are a lot of us who do like to have those conversations and do work well together, and we're going to continue to do that. But it is a little bit different than what the average person sees at home, and it's just because of the way things are.
Turning to an issue that has bipartisan interest here in the Valley, and that's water. Valley farmers face the potential, if we have another dry year, in some cases of as severe as a zero allocation. What are you hearing from growers and farmers, but what do you think the chances of seeing some federal action on water moving forward in this Congress and next?
Well, 1837 was passed out of the House last year, and that was passed. That was Congressman Nunes's bill. And it was a bill that really addressed a lot of our water issues. The Senate didn't do anything to take it up or have the debate. I looked at a few pieces of legislation that I thought were moving through the House and trying to attach something to it that would help at least relax some of the Endangered Species Act regulations so that we can run those pumps. What we're hearing right now and what we're seeing quite a bit, anybody that drives out in the country is going to see a lot of well trucks, well drilling trucks running around, working on the side of the road, drilling water wells. People are desperate. I've drilled two wells personally on my farm. I've got a well in one of my ranches that's pulled out of the ground right now. They're working on to see what they can do. All my neighbors are putting in wells. And when you start drilling wells, some of these guys are spending upwards of $1 million a hole in the ground. And when you've got the west side looking at a 0% allocation this coming year, people are scared. And when you start to make these when we come into this time of the year where we've got to start making decisions for the next year, what are you going to plant? What are you going to grow? You've got to tell your banker, well, this is the amount of water I'm going to have. This is what I can do or what I can't do. I mean, it's getting to a really hectic time. So we're going to have to find a way to get the Senate to the table and have this conversation to see if we can get this figured out as quick as possible, because this is something that is going to be very, very tough on the Valley.
Speaking of agriculture, the Farm Bill is in conference right now. When the House returns to Washington after Veterans Day, what are you looking for with that bill?
Well, as far as the Senate and the House versions, they're pretty similar. There's one provision in there that's pretty important to the Valley. I mean, the area that I represent is the largest dairy district in the country. The 21st has more cows than anywhere else in the country. And there's a provision in there specifically for dairy that the House does not want, or House leadership does not want. Colin Peterson has said he will not pass a farm bill without it, and then the Senate is okay with it. And it's a Dairy Security Act that if you decide to be part of one of the programs that are out there, when production gets too high and consumers aren't buying your product, they come in and say, well, you've got to reduce your production by a small percentage to try to get in line. And I think that's not a bad thing. I mean, when consumers aren't buying your product but the government's writing you a check, you shouldn't be producing a product no one is buying. And I think that's the government's way of coming in and saying, look, we'll protect you from going broke, so that we can protect our food supply, but we don't want you overproducing the marketplace to hurt yourself in the long run. And I think that's a responsible place to be, but we'll see how it plays out. It's going to be probably one of the tougher fights on the policy side. Obviously, on the food stamp side, there's some big differences between the Senate and the House version, and where they're going to fall in the middle, it's anybody's guess right now.
Speaking of the dairy industry, California dairy operators have been hit hard over the past couple of years, really. The state has its own pricing system that's different from the federal system, and that's been a source of concern for a lot of folks in the industry. Where do you see the future of the dairy industry as somebody who makes his living doing that when you aren't in Washington and your family has a long history in that industry? What's the health of the California dairymen?
Well, we've had obviously quite a few tough years, and just last week, another dairyman actually committed suicide. So it's been tough. I've lost at least three friends that I personally know that took their own lives in the last few years, and so a friend of mine just this past week, who had just sold his dairy, and times were tough for him, but. The issue that we face is the pricing system. And the California Secretary of Agriculture is in a funny spot with the way she prices milk. She's got to rely on studies, but those studies they're not quite the same as what they used to be when there was more processors out there. Now it's very consolidated. There's only a few out there. And whatever information they can gather from that, they can't use that for public pricing because it would basically release personal information of these specific companies. And it just gotten to that point where now we need to find a new way to price. And the fight has been on the whey component specifically of our pricing system. And the pricing system is very, very complicated. But the whey component is something that California dairymen feel like we've gotten the short end of the stick on because – over the last 10 years, and I've been really engaged in this fight as a dairy farmer and now as a congressman, because the rest of the country is paying their dairymen fairly for the whey component, and California is not. And what we've done, or at least what I've done, I introduced a piece of legislation. Senator Feinstein introduced the same piece of legislation, and my piece of legislation is actually in the Farm Bill. And what it'll do when the Farm Bill is passed will allow California dairymen the opportunity to petition the federal government to start a federal pricing system for California. And it'll put us more in line with the rest of the country so that California dairymen aren't always disadvantaged when times are bad or times are good. I mean, if the other guys are taking advantage of something that they produce and we produce the same product but we're not getting the same price, our California guys have always got one arm tied behind their back, and it just makes it tough for them to compete.
Back to one more thing with the Farm Bill. You mentioned the food stamp component, and that's been a controversial element of that bill as it was passed in the House. Republicans sought a rather significant cut over around 10 years in the food stamp program. The numbers in that program have grown substantially over the past few years. The San Joaquin Valley is an area that has very, very high food insecurity. What are your thoughts on that program and its effectiveness right now? Is it something that we can afford to cut? Is it something that we can afford not to cut? Where do you stand on that?
Well, the Senate passed and the House both passed legislation, Farm Bill, that made cuts to food stamps. So both sides agree that there has to be some trimming. The difference in that number is pretty wide. And I voted against the House version. I thought it was just too much at this time, especially when the government has come in and caused a lot of our problems. When you look at what's going on with the water situation, the federal government is the one that's in the place to fix this, and they haven't. They haven't addressed it. When you look at what's going on in the dairy provisions or the dairy industry, it's, again, the government that's there. And I just had a tough time as someone that's here to represent my district in federal government making those decisions when our branches are failing to fix the problems too. And so I'd like to see something come from this, a good number that doesn't hurt my constituents, but also helps save the government money, because we all know that there's always going to be some fraud and some abuse, and we have to trim that, and we have to make sure that goes away. But at the same time, we've got to fix the issues, the overlying issues that have the real impact and force people into those types of programs, and that's create jobs.
One last question before we go. High-speed rail. You've been a vocal critic of the high-speed rail program in California. You've called it extravagant and unnecessary. Kings County has been a hotbed of opposition from this. Kings County supervisor was quoted the other day saying, "We can't afford to lose a single acre of ag land to high-speed rail. We don't want it, whether it's this route or that route or another route." There is a concern I've heard from some people who are in the first section of railway. They're standing to lose as other people throughout the valley standing to be relocated or lose their farms, or lose portions of their land, that we will be left with a 30-something mile stretch of track that we'll spend a whole lot of money to do. It seems like that probably is going to move forward. We'll see where that lawsuit goes, but it's quite possible that it does move forward, that we're going to be left with this really expensive piece of track that ultimately cost a lot of money, but by stopping future expenditures on high-speed rail isn't really useful beyond just serving as a regular rail line. In terms of the long-term vision, where do you see California's role in trying to, and the federal government's role with high-speed rail? Is there ever a scenario you can see where high-speed rail is something viable? Maybe it's not, I understand your opposition, maybe it's not at this time, but do you ever see a chance for this to get off on the right foot?
Well, I actually think that the rush to build this one the way it is planned is the biggest problem. As far as in general, ever in the future, no, I always think there's an opportunity. I think you should always keep your options open and your mind open to these new ideas. But when the federal government came in right before the 2010 election cycle and dropped $700 million, but a total of there's about $3 billion in federal dollars coming to this thing. I mean, $3 billion is such a small percentage of the overall cost, but they showed up and said, here's $3 billion, and that's a lot of money, and said, you've got to spend it as fast as possible by 2017. And we didn't even have, and we still don't to this day, have an alignment. We don't know where it's going to be built. We don't have a real plan. We don't know what it's going to cost someone to ride it. We don't know what it's going to cost to build it. I mean, there's a lot of unknowns there. And now we've got such a small amount of money on the overall scheme of or the overall size of the project, but still a lot of money to the average person to hurry up and start building this project. And I think that's our biggest mistake. I think that if you're serious about this, let's have a serious conversation. If you're serious about building anything, if it's your business, if it's your house, if it's anything, you don't walk in the door and say, look, I'm not sure what my plan is. I'm not sure what I'm going to do, but I've got this money in my pocket and I've got to start building today. I mean, that's just not a good plan anyway, anywhere. It has to be done right. And so I'd like to see them slow it down. I'd like to see them forget about the $3 billion, allow the federal government to use that money for something more useful, and leave it on the shelf and start to talk about this in a more sincere way instead of just let's build as fast as we can because we've got this money burning a hole in our pocket. Project in general, this one today, I offered an amendment to, Washington in appropriations. All my amendment said was the Surface Transportation Board has to approve this project in its entirety. Well, why did I ask for that? Well, because I don't believe they have a plan. And if they have a plan, show us your plan, put it on paper, and get a permit based on that plan for the whole project. Because this isn't a little regional rail. This is something that's going to be built across the whole state. And it's going to affect everybody in the state. And you can't start to spend money on something when you don't have a plan for the whole project. If you don't know where your end game is, why do you want to start? And then when you look at my portion of the valley, we've got Amtrak going through our district. And I've got three stations. I've got Hanford, Corcoran, and Wasco. Those are the only three stations I actually have in my district. We've got from Bakersfield down to L.A., we have to ride a bus to get into L.A. So we're going to build a very expensive rail, right next to at some points, literally sharing the same right-of-way, and others a couple miles away when we should be filling in the gaps. I mean, there's just a lot of things that need to be done first. And I just feel like they're doing this all wrong. So it's been a challenge, and obviously my constituents aren't thrilled with it. And when you talk to them, I mean, there is some that are supportive, but for the most part, most of them are opposed to this project. And so I've got to do my best to represent my constituents and their dollars.
Republican Congressman David Valadao joining us today on Valley Edition. Congressman Valadao, thank you so much.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Really enjoyed it.
You're listening to Valley Edition on Valley Public Radio. Stay with us. We'll be back in just a moment to tell you why your pharmacist may be playing a bigger role in your primary care in the coming months and years here in California. That and much more straight ahead on Valley Edition.